Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Eshedarel. Hello. Today, we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about the unity of Israel and try and understand how can we realize it in practice on our way to a better life. Be with us, Yael. Please. Yeah, on this show, we'd like to focus on the Year of Unity as declared by the Ministry of Education and try and understand how can we teach children in school and kindergarten to reach the recognition of what unity is and to eventually reach a certain level of unity. And I'd like to open with the question of what do we have to tell children? What is true unity? For children, you have to gradually, bit by bit, through exercises and workshops, through studying and learning in a group, and in general, all the learning should be in a group. Physics, mathematics, biology, zoology, whatever. Everything in a group. We have to develop a sense of collective responsibility in them, commitment toward the group. The teacher doesn't relate to an individual student, but to the group as a whole. Either everyone succeeds or everyone's at fault. They get their grades as a group. And this is the way to study and teach. Meaning, there's no such thing as a file on some student where it says how much he knows or doesn't know or his grades, 50, 70, 90. No such thing. It's all as a group. A group, that's it. And then, but it's necessary to accompany this group. For someone to accompany them, an educator, that will explain to them what's the right way to work in the group. But for everyone to participate and for everyone to feel responsible, it's not that there's one smart guy in the group and he does everyone's homework. No. And, of course, the educator has to constantly examine the extent of everyone's participation. But the main thing for us is the participation. Because in a group of students, there are those that are better, those that aren't as good. Everyone has subjects that they're better at. But all in all, what's important for us is the correct interaction between them, where they help each other. This is how it has to be in a class. In a group. So the system relates to them as a group, and this already creates in a child a different attitude. Yeah, this is how he feels himself. Later, whatever place he comes to in life, what he'll be looking for is, what kind of a group is there here? I don't feel them, I don't see them. Are they connected this way or not? He'll all the time see society consisting of different groups, that connect between them, that in them, among them, among all of them, there's the same method of connection, but there are those that are more, those that are less, maybe in different styles. Maybe later on, just like students, each goes his own way. Someone becomes a chemist in one group, someone becomes a physicist in another group, someone's an artist, this, that. Maybe each of them looks for something according to what he feels is close to him, but still he knows how to work in a group. He doesn't know how to do anything by himself. No one does. Because man, to begin with, was created as a social being, as a social creature. No being acts this way. Well, besides maybe bees, suppose that for them it's all instinctive. But we have to teach people how to function as a society, because we see, whether we like it or not, evolution is pushing us toward unity. And if we don't know how to connect, then it's to our detriment. It really changes a person's entire presence in the world, meaning I'm a part of a group and it's not me per se in life. Yeah, today, what does he feel? Miserable, alone, on his computer, getting confused with all the rubbish. He's being cursed by different advertisements and so on. He has to feel that he is a part of society, that society is his anchor, his place. He's born there as a new human being, inseparable from society. This is interesting. You're saying that he's born there as a new human being, as a new person. How will he feel differently when he feels that I'm a part of a group and it's not me in and of myself? What kind of a different experience will he get there? He lives a social life and not his own individual life, because in his own individual life, he's like an animal. Man is a part of the animate world, the animal world, when he goes and unites with others and achieves connection, unity. They, between them, produce spirituality, a new mankind called a group, and anyone that's a part of it, not because they're opposed to other groups, not at all, but that in this they form, they shape this new spiritual being that consists of many people. But this image, that's what's important for them. And in this image that they shape among them, this group, yes, that's called Adam, in Hebrew meaning man, then are they called man. They're all parts of that man, of that Adam. Now you understand why we're called Bnei Adam, in Hebrew both meaning the sons of Adam and also human beings, that we have to build the concept of this man between us in the group, and in it to feel a new life, care, connection, a new development. We start feeling nature because nature is entirely integral. It's all interconnected. We, through our integration, incorporation in the group, build a new integral sense. And then a person no longer feels only himself, but I feel the group. And through the group, I can feel the whole of nature, that nature is supposed a billion times greater, but greater than the group. And then at least to that extent, of one divided by a billion, I feel the real nature. It's interesting because usually we think the very opposite. We tend to think that animals live in a group, and man, his development is that he becomes more and more of an individual. Usually animals don't live in a group. There are only a few such, like wolves and so on. And there too, it's either by family, like predators, for example. Usually it's around a pack, around a male and a female, that they keep the others together. For them, it's about family ties. And here, the connection is based on an idea that we want to be closer to nature. And this way, to start feeling the different phenomena in nature, of the inner nature that's hidden from us. And when we unite in a group, we start feeling, we start getting this kind of sense where we start feeling the inner nature. Okay, going back to that group of children that we talked about in the beginning, when we talk about unity and we want to direct children through exercises and studying together in a group and so on and so forth, we have to give them a picture of what is that goal that that group of children has to aspire for in order to achieve unity. Under the concept of we want to reach unity, can you give us some more details? So we'll have a picture that that group of children will aspire for during the year or during several years. What are we aspiring for? The measure to which they care for the group and not for themselves, each of them. So this is what they aspire for, that everyone cares for the group and not for himself, for them to feel the group. They don't know this. Children don't really feel this, but we, through exercises, bring them to a state where gradually they start feeling the group, they start shifting their importance from themselves to the entire group. For children, it's actually easier than for grown-ups. Why? Because they have the tendency to be together, to play together. And therefore, as it says, educate a youth according to his own ways. We collected questions from people that are engaged in education, and we'd like to ask you these questions. We said that the system creates a certain framework called a group. What kind of process do the children have to undergo internally? What stages do they have to go through in order to reach a state of unity? Only through exercises that we do these exercises in workshops, in groups, that they study all their subjects in a circle. In a circle meaning how? Meaning that they also sit in a circle where they see each other and they talk to each other, even if they're studying chemistry or whatever. The teacher is standing by the blackboard, but they are sitting amongst them, and they have to solve the problem together. They have to talk about it together. He turns to all of them as one. Is there a certain theoretical material that's supposed to be a part of this? No, only based on experience. Theoretical materials are ruled out. Is there a need to show them the difference? By theoretical, you mean regarding unity, connection. Yes. No. Only from life. They're none as wise as the experienced. Only from experience. Should we talk about the state as it is today, that there is separation, or to allow them themselves to reach a state of unity? Would it be correct to talk about the separation that exists today in society? To some extent, yes, but in things that are related to them that they can understand, things that are reachable for them. Should they share their impressions from life? Of course, discussions first and foremost. But these should be orderly, direct discussions in the direction of unity. Yes. Can you give an example? How bad it is without unity and how good it is with unity and what problems we can solve through unity in the family, at home, on the street, in the city, in the country, in the world. They're supposed to bring their problems from home, from their friendships and so on. If not, then the teacher should invent them. So it's better for them to come from them. No, not from home. It's better for the educator to do it. Okay. Still, we have work to do with the children. Such a group of children that undergo such a process that directs them toward building a feeling of a group, a mutual group. The process that they go through in class, should it extend beyond the boundaries of the classroom? For example, I remember that when my children were in school, there were different activities that I had to participate in as a parent, meaning that the school gave them such tasks that they had to involve the entire family, and I don't even exactly remember what it was now. So here, where we're saying that we want to bring unity into the classroom and create a feeling that everyone's together and united, that we're in a group, should the children also be the ambassadors of this idea beyond the boundaries of the classroom and their families and so on? I truly hope that this is how it's going to be, but not immediately. We have to be cautious. Are they already capable of this? Usually, children like acting out, playing things from their own life. They like being a teacher, things from school and so on. So let's hope that this is how it's going to be, but naturally, meaning that we're not going to aim for it. Slowly. Okay. Now, do we have to depict the perfect picture for them? What are we aspiring for? Here you're asking about the method in detail, and it's something that we can't do right now. Okay. Rules of behavior. What rules of behavior should we give them in class as a group? what would you put the emphasis on? There is no class, but it's a group. We're no longer talking about the kind of class and teaching that we're familiar with, where there's a teacher and pupils sitting in front of him. A group, it means that everyone's sitting in a circle. How many children in such a group? Preferably not many. Then you'll have several circles. How many children do you have in a class? About 30. Yeah, something like that. So you'll have three groups. So there are about 10 children in every group. Yeah. What rules of behavior should they follow? There are the rules that we understand that these are the rules of the integral society. What are the main principles or rules that we should follow? That I understand that I'm an egoist. And I think only about myself. But now, we're acting as if we have new relations, different relations. Where we reach a connection that's above the hate, the rejection, the collision, the envy, the lust, the honor. And we're acting as if we're above all this. Meaning, here I'm like in a theater where I and the others act out good relations, and we also talk about our bad relations. We don't hide them, we don't erase them. But we talk about both. And then we're like in a theater where even though that you and I, off stage, we have this kind of friction between us, but on stage, we're as if the best of friends, that we really like each other. And then this way, we start understanding, meaning, the children, they start understanding that it is possible to be above my feelings, and I know how to control my feelings toward you, suppose. And it's not considered lying, but I'm aware of it. And you're aware of it too. But we understand the egoistic human nature, and we're going above our own nature, not in order for each of us to gain something from it, but in order to build a society, a group, a better class. And what's going to happen with all those pressures and the different things beneath the surface? There will be no pressure because we know both about this and also about that. So there will be no pressure. To the contrary, if we're open with each other and we don't hide anything, it's called love covers for all crimes. We know that toward each other we're egoists and that we cover this with love. Meaning that the children will tell each other that they envy each other or why are they angry at each other. You can give it 5 minutes. But everything will be open. And the fact that it's open, then it won't leave any bad blood, so to speak. They're going to be left with facts that this is how we are by nature. And it's not that this is how I am and this is how you are, but this is how nature made us, created us. So I actually turn the emotional parts into facts of nature. Not the emotional parts. It's all emotion. But the complaints that I have against others, it comes from the evil nature. And how do I relate to this? Suppose you're very edgy or aggravated and you take it out on me. No. Together, we have to work in such a way that I'll try to help you and you'll help me. And then we'll overcome, we'll rise above this nature. How do we build our relations despite this being my nature? And how's the educator supposed to relate to these kinds of outbursts of hate? He has to know how does he manage these things so that really love will cover for all crimes. Just imagine the kind of children that are growing up here and how later on they can get along in family life when they get married and have children, the extent to which they'll know how to manage their family life in a rational, nice, and good way. Can you give me an example regarding the process you just described where, from the very start, no, with children it's not immediately and not from the very start, but gradually it's something that takes years. You won't start with a child working with a six-year-old this way. But at the age of six, they're already in a group. They don't know why and how, but you accustom them to being in a group. And then you gradually give them different tasks, homework, for them to do it in the group, for them to solve different problems in the group, for them to go over the material that the teacher just talked about in the group, for each of them to explain to the others how does he understand these materials, and the others add to it. So they'll understand that society does not relate to a single individual, but to a group. So first of all, he doesn't feel inferior. Also, he doesn't have this inner distress. He doesn't curse himself and get mad at himself. Who am I? What am I? Why can't I this or that? It's all dispersed within the ten. And no one's angry at him because he's one way or another. No, and the teacher makes no differentiation between them. He relates to them only as a ten. A ten meaning a group of 10 students. Yeah. Okay, sorry about asking maybe such a practical question, but today the system of education is very achievement-oriented and they're very stressed out about the quantity of material that they have to give. And you're saying that their kids sitting in a 10 and they start talking. Now, today, a teacher, he saves time. He tells them what's going on and this way he can go over many more things. So, seemingly, they learn less. What are they left with? A person that finishes school, what is he left with? He has general knowledge about this, about that. He can think in a certain way, something he developed over time. He'll learn more if he'll be in a group and they'll talk about it. What does it develop in a person, in a child? He doesn't hear the teacher. He doesn't. But if his friends talk about it, then envy, lust, honor, all these things, they start working in him and he'll learn much more from them. All in all, when a student finishes school the way you described just now or the way that students finish school today, God help us, where does he benefit more? He won't remember anything besides how to be in society a good person that's useful, beneficial to society. All the rest he'll learn. And he'll know all the subjects. And he'll learn it much better than today. Today, what are you left with after school? How will he learn this? This is what I'm asking. Because he hears from the other students, from his friends. What he hears from them enters his ear. Whereas when a teacher talks, who listens? So he becomes smarter even though that as if he receives less, not smarter. He's on a different degree of wisdom, of perception, because he has the perception of the entire 10. He perceives like all the 10. He has an integral kind of perception. And not the way it was with the individual kind of perception. So there's actually an essential change here, necessarily. So you don't measure it like you measure it today. You can't measure it. Okay, our time's almost up. I want to start summarizing. We started talking about unity. We want to explain to children what unity is and take them through different processes that will lead them to unity. We don't explain to them about unity. We get them accustomed to it. You see? And the same with grown-ups. We accustom them to unity. This is what we need. We have to make them accustomed to being together. we have to accustom them to connection, to understand that only in connection can they solve problems. And for them to advance this way, we're not teaching them morals and yes, unity is good. You hear this? You remember why it's good? You remember why I told you? Now repeat, why is unity good? No, no such thing. This is monkey see, monkey do. What then? For them to feel it from their small experience. And during the show you mentioned that we tie all the different subjects into this. We're studying nature in all of our subjects. Nature is integral. We have to rewrite all of our textbooks so that a person will study nature as something integral. How every subject explains about the unity of things only from its own angle. Physics, chemistry, biology, zoology, politics, economy, you name it. Family life, animals, people, whatever. We look at nature as something integral through all of this and through an integral point of view, so much so that we want to enter nature and become a part of it. You can also study history this way, sure, but not the way that we tell about it, but the way it unfolds toward us, that it's all the time pushing us to be more and more interconnected. Last question, the word unity, the way you see it, what kind of a feeling does it give? I don't know, it's like all the words that we use, especially the way politicians use them. They lost their inner meaning. Unity, it means that I'm connected with everyone and everyone's connected with me, and it's impossible to cut this connection. It's something natural, and we only have to learn how connected we really are. It's unity, mutual guarantee, connection, love, all these things that are a part of a single system called nature. Dr. Leitman, thank you very, very much. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. Until next time, all the best.